Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, the preservation, and the presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
The Sika Sutta. The Buddha addressed those gathered. Friends, there are three trainings that I teach. The Buddha is referring to the Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path is often characterized as a threefold, eight-factored path. And the threefold refers to the characteristics of increasing wisdom, virtue, and concentration. The Buddha continues, I teach training and heightened virtue. I teach training and heightened concentration. I teach training and heightened wisdom. And as we can say that the Four Noble Truths define the overarching context of the Buddha's Dhamma, so does that. These are the three qualities of mind that we develop within the Dhamma. And the Buddha explains very clearly what those are. The training and heightened virtue brings restraint in speech, in actions, and livelihood. And we learned that when we first looked at the Eightfold Path, that the third, fourth, and fifth factor of the Eightfold Path are just that. And those three factors of right speech, right action, and right livelihood encompasses a human being's our entire behavior. And it greatly simplifies and diminishes the need to overanalyze things. In other words, we're just looking in a broad way of how our behavior informs us of what we're holding in mind. Because whatever we hold in mind will always come out of our mouth or be expressed by our actions. We can't hide what we are most mindful of. This Dhamma practitioner remains pure in their behavior at all times. Again, it's a simple direction, but it points to how profoundly pure we must be as Dhamma practitioners. This is not a practice that we get any benefit from half measures, except as they keep us on a path. In other words, our mindfulness must always be on the culmination of where we're going. But we also understand by taking true refuge that that's something any human being is capable of, as exemplified by the Buddha. There's that lower denture again. They remain pure in their behavior at all times. They train themselves following the rules of behavior, meaning the right speech, right action, and right livelihood, and understand the danger of even the slightest deviation. Even the slightest deviation. Now, remember, the Buddha wasn't a moral teacher. He was a practical teacher, and he's teaching this not because of the punishment one might get from bad behavior from some outside agency, but it's the unskillful behavior is an aspect of self-referential views, or it wouldn't manifest as self-centered behavior. It makes sense, doesn't it? So while there certainly is a moral component to what the Buddha taught, that wasn't his intent. In other words, he wasn't just teaching blanket morality, and if you would just be a good person, everything else will be taken care of. The Buddha addressed the underlying cause of poor behavior, which is, to use the word, wrong mindfulness, or holding in mind or clinging to fabricated views. So these are simple instructions that get to the very heart and profound nature and depth of the Dhamma. This is called training in heightened virtue. It's simple though, isn't it? The training in heightened concentration, jhana, develops the concentration necessary to support the refined mindfulness that the Buddha just mentioned that is necessary to monitor our behavior, to recognize and abandon unskillful behavior. It takes at least a measure of concentration, doesn't it? That's what the Buddha is referring to here. Again, simple practical instruction. This Dhamma practitioner remains secluded from sensory indulgence and unskillful mental qualities. They enter and remain in the first jhana, characterized by rapture and pleasure, born of seclusion and accompanied by directed thought and evaluation. We do this, excuse me for a minute. that first jhana is what we experience in every meditation, every right meditation, the jhana meditation session, is characterized by these deepening levels of concentration. The first level is simply that. We take a breath, we begin right from the beginning. We establish seclusion from the world, however we do that. We sit and we take a breath. That single breath is jhana meditation. We've turned our mind away from the distractions of worldly entanglements and put that mindfulness on our breath. That's an act of directed thought, and one can't help but evaluate, meaning place a value judgment, which at its simplest explanation is, am I doing this right? Am I doing it wrong? Am I getting benefit or am I not? And that's a normal part of beginning meditation. Joyful engagement. I feel joyfully engaged with my Dhamma practice. I'm glad that I'm sitting here meditating. The fact that I'm doing it is inspiring me. It's the end thoughts. It's filling me with enthusiasm. But in this stage, I'm still directing my thought away from entanglements in the world and back towards my breath. That's the first level of jhana that we all engage in every time we begin meditation. As concentration deepens further, they enter and remain in the second jhana. Focused thoughts, which is characterized by focused thoughts and insight, delight and pleasure born of composure and inner assurance arise. It's simply a description that the Buddha is giving us now 2,600 years later of a deepening level of concentration and a deepening calm. He's simply describing what we should be looking for to notice that our meditation is actually bearing fruit, that deepening calm, that developing inner poise, the feeling of at least an initial release from entanglements with the world. As concentration deepens further, they enter or remain in the third jhana. Delight and pleasure and the perception of pleasure and pain disappear. And we've all experienced that, even if it was just for a moment. The time frame of each level of meditative absorption, of each level of jhana, is not significant. Or the Buddha would point it out here, and many other teachings. He would say that when you enter the first jhana, you got to stay there for 8 seconds or 8 minutes or 8 years before you go to the second jhana. There's no time frame on any of this. It's just a recognition of ever-deepening but ever-impermanent levels of ever-deepening concentration. And so we've all experienced that. Even if it's just for the moment, our minds have calmed enough. They've developed enough of a measure of concentration just right now to not grasp after pleasure or have any aversion to pain. And for most of us as beginning meditators, that's very, very brief. But every one of us has talked about how we've noticed that increases over time. Excuse me. So that deepening level of jhana is simply characterized as a lack of grasping after what makes me feel good or what I hope to avoid in life, or even within my own thoughts. In fact, you could say it's ultimately within our own thoughts that grasping ends. Let me just go back one line just to put it back in context. Delight and pleasure and the perception of pleasure and pain disappear. Equanimity and refined mindfulness increases, and a peaceful mind prevails. We now start noticing a noticeable development of calm and peace within our own minds. Some people will characterize this, and it does feel like this, will characterize that as spaciousness. We're simply not jamming one thought next to the next, one thought with the next thought due to clinging to our thoughts. We are the ones that are actually creating spaciousness in our own minds. We're the ones that are creating spaciousness for new ideas, such as the new idea of framed by the Eightfold Path, the new idea of developing right view. And as we deepen concentration, we're opening up our minds, we're creating the space between fabricated thoughts for reality. That's the reason why we deepen concentration. So we have a measure of calm in our minds for the Dhamma to bloom, for the Dhamma to develop. The Buddha continues, as concentration deepens further, they enter and remain in the fourth jhana. Mindful equanimity prevails. Equanimity is simply a balanced, calm, and peaceful state of mind. And there's an aspect of the fourth level of jhana in the first level. It's just not as profound, and it's not as developed. So what we're talking about when we're referring to the deeper levels of jhana is simply deepening levels of concentration that, as a aspect of Dhamma practice, as an aspect of right meditation, must be noticed. We need to notice that our concentration, that our jhana practice is actually deepening our concentration. But each level is defined, isn't it? And each level has a gentle flow from one level to the next. And the point I'm making here is that these levels aren't to be grasped after. They are a gentle development of right meditation. They're just there to be recognized. Greed and aversion disappear. This is the development of concentration that brings peace and calm here and now. The only time frame that the Buddha has for his Dhamma practice is here and now, not yesterday and not tomorrow. The training in heightened wisdom brings the ending of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking. The training in heightened wisdom. Through the ending of the defilements, the wise Dhamma practitioner remains in the defilement-free release from ignorance. The defilement-free release. The defilements are greed, aversion, and deluded thinking. That's the common characteristic of any human being rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So the resolution to that, greed, aversion, and deluded thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, it is wisdom rooted in wisdom of Four Noble Truths that obviates or eliminates greed, aversion, and deluded thinking naturally. In other words, it's something that falls away. I'm not grasping after being rid of this behavior so that I'm a good person. I'm doing it because it's a hindrance to my awakening. The motivation is different. The first motivation is an ideological motivation, even though it looks very similar to a practical motivation of simple human awakening. But the distinction is critical to awakening. I can't do this because I want to be good. I have to do this because it makes sense. The wise Dhamma practitioner has established profound wisdom, fully mindful moment by moment as life occurs. That's the description of an awakened human being, but it's also a description of ongoing Dhamma practice. And I'm going to read it again. The wise Dhamma practitioner has established profound wisdom and is fully mindful moment by moment as life occurs. We bring the Dhamma into our life moment by moment as life occurs. The only way we can do that is with a measure of calm. That's why the Buddha taught jhana meditation and nothing else. This is called heightened wisdom. Having the right way of thinking, the right view, moment by moment, is wisdom. And it's the foundation for wisdom. So again, there's no wisdom to be developed in conceptual ideas such as I need to be compassionate, I need to be honest, I need to be loving. It only has meaning when it's a natural expression of our own awakening. It has to be authentic for it to be meaningful, even in the world. Now, and again, the extreme view would be, well, isn't any good behavior helpful? Yes, it is. And I don't want to get too deep into this, but an inauthentic humanity almost always manifests in telling other people how to live rather than exemplifying it yourself. And again, let's not get too deep into that, but the only way to be authentically human and so to be an authentically good human without the moral judgment is to take to the Dhamma and awaken. And there's such, and I've talked about this a few times, and some of you have, in fact, most of you have mentioned this in one way or another. The power that comes from developing the Eightfold Path is the moment-by-moment knowing that my behavior is no longer going to be harmful towards me or towards another human being. And that is ultimately the underlying stress that we all carry. Anytime a human being has done something in their behavior that has hurt another human being that we've noticed, has conditioned our own behavior, it is hurtful to another person. But we start creating our own little bit of paranoia about our own behavior, that once we've hurt someone, we might do it again. And nobody wants to do that. We're not aware of it, and we create very powerful and subtle strategies to not recognize it. That's called ignoring our own ignorance. But it's a gnawing kind of fear that is only alleviated by me knowing that there's nothing left within me that can hurt me or another human being. And that is the power that is developed through the Dhamma, and there's nothing magical about it. It's simply incorporating these three trainings that the Buddha's teaching. And then getting used to our own behavior as harmless behavior. And I think all of us would recognize that. That it truly is the essence of peace by not having any ill will left within me. But that has to be methodically recognized and abandoned. Because it's impossible to not have ill will towards ourselves and others if our minds are rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. But as we start developing the Dhamma, we can recognize the practical behavior. We can recognize the practical benefits of the Dhamma by recognizing our behavior. That's why it's there. That's why it's so powerful to hold in mind our behavior as the benchmark for is Dhamma practice working for me. Because if I'm still acting out, in very subtle levels of wrong speech, action, or livelihood, I know that there's a little bit more work to go. But it doesn't mean I should judge myself harshly. In fact, it's another reason for joyful engagement. I'm looking at the things that I need to change in my life to develop within myself what I want from myself in this human life. The Buddha continues. These are the three trainings of my Dhamma. And there's nothing really complicated about this, is there? The trainings in heightened virtue, concentration, and wisdom establish persistence, steadfastness, absorption in jhana, refined mindfulness, and wise restraint. These three trainings should be practiced consistently and in all situations. Does anybody think we can't practice this in all situations? No, they're simple guidelines for being a human being. And so as the Buddha never asked us to do anything extra human, extraordinary, superhuman, or mythological in its results. The Buddha simply asked us to be a human being. But he didn't just ask us, and he didn't just point the way. He showed us step by step a simple and methodical way of doing it. And it really is a matter, I said this I think 2 weeks ago, it really is a matter of simply following the direction. Practice consistently in all situations and with unlimited concentration, meaning we're always developing concentration. A student asked me, this is now a couple of years ago, and you've heard me say it, but it fits right here. He asked me, why would the Buddha continue to meditate after he awakened? Now, there's an inference there that this gentleman wasn't really enjoying his meditation. He was hoping to get to the end of it. But the answer is, why wouldn't an awakened human being continue to take skillful pleasure in meditation? Unlimited concentration. There's no limit to the development of concentration. At least there's no practical limit. So we're always developing it. As our concentration increases, and I think every one of you would recognize this, there's a direct relationship between understanding and concentration, meaning understanding life in relation to the Four Noble Truths, excuse me. And what I'm saying is, and it's really just another way of saying, that from a deepening level of concentration, that can support the refined mindfulness necessary to hold in mind the Eightfold Path. So a simpler way of saying it, as my concentration increases, I understand more because I'm able to hold in mind the principles of understanding. And so it manifests. Resting on concentration, not resting on an ideological vision that I might call to mind and call that meditation. And that may be, but it's not jhana meditation. That's the only reason I'm making that point. This is the meditation that the Buddha taught that's to be used within Dhamma practice. And the reason why is for that one reason, for deepening concentration. The Buddha continues, these are the three trainings that bring pure understanding. Developing these three trainings, you will be called a rightly self-awakened one who has completed the path. A rightly self-awakened one who has completed the path. That line, rightly self-awakened, is so important to just to remind and hold that in mind as Dhamma practitioners. Because the Buddha is referring to himself, he always referred to himself as a rightly self-awakened one. But he's also teaching us to do exactly the same as him. In other words, we don't need a mythical or magical Buddha pulling us along the path from some non-physical realm. We become rightly self-awakened. That's what it means. We develop the understanding within ourselves to become rightly self-awakened. The cessation of ignorance of Four Noble Truths and craving for self-satisfaction extinguishes the fires of passion. That's the end of the sutta. Thought that was. Thank you all. What a wonderful and relatively short sutta that, again, just puts it frames the Dhamma in such very simple terms that it gives us continuing guidance moment by moment through our Dhamma practice. So let's hear what you have to say, and I think that's Josh up in the top left. How are you, Josh?
Good, John. Thank you for the lesson this morning. Hi, everybody. And I'm just going to listen this morning.
I'm glad you're here. It was good to talk with you yesterday. Who's got the top? How are you, Ram?
I'm good. You're right. This is just such a nice short sutta, and it just keeps coming back to the practical application of the Dhamma. Mm-hmm. And the immediate pleasure that comes from that. I already was looking at his beginning with the virtuous factors, how that is so commonly misunderstood, that it is not about being a good Buddhist. It's about understanding that these small transgressions. That's, it's not a cause for shame. It's a cause for paying attention.
Yeah.
And that's where the fine tuning of your life in the Dhamma happens. You see, that wasn't all that skillful. Let me change that. The practicality and from that, the pleasure of applying the Dhamma is boundless. It supports you every minute of the day.
Thank you, Ram. That's a great description of joyful engagement in the Dhamma. It's just living within the framework of the Dhamma. Each moment has meaning, and there really is no other way to describe it. I think it was Jyotsi we were talking about that a little bit yesterday. And you can't experience it without having it, but once you have it, you know it. It's just that way. It's authentic. Thank you, Ram. Mary, how are you?
Good morning, John. Good morning, everyone.
Good to see you.
Wonderful. Yes, good to see you. A wonderful sutta, short and foundational. The ability to take something that's an eightfold path and talk about it in terms of three-fold path with eight factors is just a reminder of the wisdom, virtue, and concentration required to be on the path to awakening. Some of what I heard is the reminder of the danger of the slightest deviation. Yeah. Can't do this in half measures. And then something you said last week about, there is such a thing as an ignoble search if that seems to be in the same vein of doing something in half measure. So
yeah,
for me, that's a reminder to believe that I can awaken. I don't know that I wake up every day thinking that's a possibility. And, you know, that's just something to work on and something to be aware of, and flip that around to that I'm on the path and that, you know, awakening is possible. So,
yeah.
So thank you, John.
Thank you, Mary. Awakening is possible. Hello, Becky.
Hi, John. Hi, everyone. Thank you for teaching us this morning, John. And I just want to say I'm very happy to be here. Every time I'm here, it's a good thing. This sutta, and actually the suttas that we've had, the practical, this is how you do it kind of suttas that we've had in the last couple of weeks, have been very helpful to me. Because it tells me that I just have to continue to persist and try to bring the Dhamma into my daily life, which I don't feel very successful at this moment. So I'm just glad to be here and glad to be reminded of this. And actually, I kind of feel the way what Mary said really resonated with me right now. I just want to thank you, and it's very good to be here. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you for joining us. It's good to have you here with us this morning. Yeah. Lorna, how are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning, John. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, it's a great little sutta. Very direct and to the point. Virtue, concentration, heightened wisdom. Virtue, I would say, you draw from the Eightfold Path. Heightened concentration, well, that's learnt on the cushion. And resulting in heightened wisdom. You spent a little bit more time describing concentration, which I think is the right thing to do. And for my concentration, what's happening at the moment, I think I'm beginning to see when I'm on the cushion and we're focusing on our breath, I'm focusing on my breath because it's the only thing that's worthwhile focusing on.
Yeah.
Everything else is a fabrication. Where everywhere else your mind may go,
yeah,
past, present, past or future, etc., etc., is a fabrication. So your breath is the only real thing that's happening while you're sitting on your cushion. That's the only reality that you can cue into to keep you in the moment.
Yeah.
And I certainly see that more and more on the cushion, and I can sort out my fabrications from reality, from my breath, much easier than I could. The more I'm doing, the more I meditate, the more you get skilled at sorting out in your mind what should be there and what shouldn't be there, is what I'm saying, really. I have mentioned this word to you before. I think it leads to a flat mind. It's when you're not concentrated, when you don't have greed, aversion, deluded thinking in your mind, you use the word calm. That word sometimes comes to me as flat, and not lively or I don't know. I can't really describe it. Just flat is a good way of describing it to me. So, you know, we kind of revert to greed, aversion, and deluded thinking again to liven things up again. and then you can see the swings, you know, it's like a seesaw, you go up and down. But so concentration, I think, is it can lead to a flat mind, but I understand because it's in reality, based in reality, if there's nothing going on, there's nothing going on, and that's why it's a bit flat. You can see the sort of circle that goes round.
Yeah.
Anyway, you mentioned right at the end there that you mentioned the line, rightly self-awakened. I think sort of I maybe could say that I'm rightly self-awakened for a moment on my cushion, meaning that there's nothing but reality, meaning my breath, in my mind when I'm meditating sometimes, and then a thought comes in and then you go around the process again. So, I mean, Mary said she doesn't wake up thinking she can awaken every morning. Maybe she's just not realizing that she's getting there, but it's just in such a very small amount of time that she's maybe just not really thinking about it, because I'm sure she's very, very well practiced and taught, so I think she probably does. But anyway, and heightened wisdom, I think you can put to what we talk about is a mature mind, when we're not just riding from greed, aversion, and deluded thinking all the time, we actually are in reality.
Yeah.
Which is the mature mind, which is a heightened wisdom mind, and a mature mind is kind of like the same thing.
It is.
Anyway, yeah, so I think that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your great insight, Lorna. Jen, how are you this morning?
Hi, John. Hi, everyone.
Morning.
Great teaching. Just highlighting, you know, kind of what Ram was saying, just if you see yourself distracted and off the path, it's right there. Just step right back on. No big whoop. Deep breath. Yeah, that's pretty much what I got out of it today. So, yeah, that's all I have to add.
Thank you, Jen. Tim, how are you this morning?
Morning, everybody.
Great, there's Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I don't have much to say. The speech is very direct and understandable. I have one question, I think more in the translation of this sutta on the part where the Buddha says these trainings of in heightened virtue, concentration, or wisdom established, and then there's five things that are listed. I'm assuming there's a lot more than that, correct? Or is that just translation?
As more as far as what?
Well, one thing I tend to develop when my practice is really going well is empathy. And I mean these five items, obviously they make, those are very strong, but I'm just curious, it's more of a question of the interpretation of the sutta, of where it was from. You know, if there was more things that are established, just to give it like this, I mean, there's many qualities I'm sure that are developed through heightened virtue, concentration, and wisdom.
Yes, and those are, they don't need to be delineated because they're a natural consequence of understanding.
Right.
You know, yeah, and it's an important question because it also points to not grasping after, oh, well, let me substitute empathy for, and that would be a concept of what it means to be empathetic, mm-hmm. as opposed to developing what the Buddha taught, which will result in true empathy, wouldn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And true compassion. I mean, a lot of I told myself it was going to go here. We can get distracted by thinking that we need to be a certain good way, as opposed to recognizing why we can't because of the way that we think. So the underlying thinking isn't really changed. It's just developing another fabricated way of living in the world. So it's what you're talking about, Tim, is foundational to the Buddhist Dhamma.
Yeah, so the sutta was I found that exactly, that the sutta is very direct and again focusing on the jhana concentration, and then the rewards from having heightened virtue, concentration, yeah. and wisdom. So,
yeah. Thank you, Laura. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I really enjoyed listening to everyone's comments and commentary, and I'm happy to be here. I don't have too much to say. I think I was so happy to come and sit on my cushion this morning, and just recognizing all of the thoughts and concepts and all of that flows through my mind, and this morning was one of those mornings. So feeling a little more overwhelmed by all of the things to do and like the sutta says, just having that framework through the virtuous path and sitting down and focusing on your breath and jhana meditation, you have that space that you talked about to be able to have the right view of things. And, from that, some simple wisdom arises, and I think that there's lots of levels, and that's this kind of continuing on this methodical path. I think you kind of get to those other levels of concentration and other levels of wisdom. And yeah, every day, every little bit helps to, because every day is a new day, every moment's a new moment.
Yeah.
You can't decide to, you can decide to hop off and you can decide to come back on.
Yeah.
So, here I am. Thank you.
I'm glad you hopped on this morning, Laura. And you're really describing the refuge that the Dhamma is, and it's always there for us. I'm glad you joined us. Say hi to everyone. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good, John.
Good to see you.
Great to be here. It's great to hear what everybody has to say. I was thinking about what Lorna said first, too, with this flatness. And I just think maybe it's another way of saying equanimity.
It is, yeah.
It's calm, it's flatness, it's equanimity. And we wish we could all have that in every moment. And it's what we're striving for. And, as I read this, I just think of the Buddha's open hand. He said at the end, I never had a closed fist, I always had an open hand. Yeah. And this is what we need to know. And this sutta is just, again, this is it. This is where it's at.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thank you for being our teacher to have that open hand to bring this sutta to us as well.
Thank you. What else would I do, though? that flatness that Lorna and you mentioned, it is equanimity, but it's a challenge to some as it's developing. Another way of saying that might be boredom. And a mind that is bored is a mind that needs immediate relief, meaning immediate distraction from that boredom. So it takes a while to get used to a flat or mind resting in equanimity, because it's such a contrast and contradiction to a grasping after mind that's rooted in ignorance. So and that's all part of Dhamma practice. So Lorna's insight into that is really profound. She was able to recognize it pretty early in her practice, And if you've noticed, Lorna won't admit to this, but if you, those of us that have learned from Lorna, you realize he's talking about that, the interface between a distracted mind and a mind that's developing concentration. It's just like she described and Kevin just talked about right now. So again, it is something to be mindful of. It's one of the hindrance. In fact, the first hindrance relates to being disappointed with a flat or mind resting in equanimity. The first hindrance is the need for constant sensory indulgence, isn't it? You know, so it's just there to be recognized. And what do we do when we find ourselves in bored? I'm going to let Lorna answer the question. So when you're stuck in a flat mind, Lorna, and you don't want it anymore, what do you do?
I accept it, I think.
Yeah,
just accept it.
What's the direct way to accepting what's occurring?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, but no, you asked me, what do I do? I don't think about my breath at that time. I just accept that this is what's occurring. Yeah. I'm not fabricating. I'm not in delusion, etc., etc. And that gives me a flat mind, equanimity, whatever. It's just another way of describing, but it feels like a flat mind to me. But that's how life is. So actually answer your question honestly, that's it. I don't go back to my breath, I just accept it.
So you're describing the fourth foundation of mindfulness.
This is part of the practice that I'm not living in a delusion all the time now.
Yeah. It's just the temporary quality of your mind at that moment.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That's another wonderful description of the fourth foundation of mindfulness. Just to be mindful of it and understand it. It doesn't need to be, because it can't be any different than it is. And in the next breath, we unite the mind back in the body. You all keep moving around. Somebody just left. We got that Tim. Brett, how are you? Karen left. I want to talk to Karen. How are you, Brett?
I'm good. Good to be here. Thank you for your teaching. Definitely enjoying it, what everybody has to say this morning. And, you know, I got on the cushion with a mind full of stuff and realized that it's all fabrications. And so that was good. And I'm going to keep on listening. And good to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you, Brett. Michael, how you doing?
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm good.
I like the suttas that you've chosen for this course. I get a lot of benefit from them. A couple of things I just noticed in this last one that. And first of all, I know Lorna has said several.
Lost your audio, Michael. Michael, your audio, you're muted.
How about now? Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Lorna mentioned the flatness, okay? Maybe I kind of like look at that maybe as like stillness, stilling, you know, the mind stills. And I think when the mind stills, it unites with the body, you know, and the mind and the body united is a very good thing. It's healthy. When the mind is united with the body, distractions don't arise, or they don't penetrate the mind, because mind, again, it doesn't take the mind out of the body. So I look at it like that, and with that, like when the mind is united with the body, and in the state of stillness, the quality of my mind, anyhow, when I experience it, is very good. I find that when the quality of my mind is good, and it's not distracted, then I feel that the other thing that's prominent here in the sutta is refined mindfulness, that moment by moment, here and now, thought process that's occurring, and I'm able to stay, you know, stay on top of it and be focused with concentration. I find that enables me to, able to develop a dispassion and a very accept life as it unfolds without being reactionary to it. It's almost like life slows down.
Yeah.
When that stillness occurs, and so that's what I've been getting out of this. That's what I, you know, I feel what Lorna was saying with flatness. But I think it's more like, for me, it's more like stillness and the mind uniting with the body, and all good things come from that.
Very well said, Michael. Thank you, Julia. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, John. I told you that I sent you an email with a chart that I actually drew up. I hope that it's correct thinking, but I'm going to try to explain it a tiny bit. So what I saw was that Buddha did, he gave, with his three trainings, it links us also to the Eightfold Path, but the three trainings lead directly to the release of dependent origination, and so that we can become awakened. And I saw it as very specific, like very specific links almost. But the heightened wisdom and heightened concentration, the origin of suffering is eliminated. And so those links that would go with the origin of suffering would be removed. And I with heightened virtue, suffering is eliminated, and restraint at the sixth sense base. I just thought that was very, it's amazing how the Buddha had linked all these things together. He's giving us all the knowledge, all the components to eliminate stress and suffering in our life and become fully awakened. The thing that really, another thing with the heightened concentration was that at the highest level of jhana, greed and aversion and deluded thinking disappears. And we finally release the defilements and further becoming. And those are those links in dependent origination of ignorance and craving and grasping. And I think those are the hardest links to remove. And so with deepened concentration, we finally can be released and experience heightened wisdom.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm explaining it correctly. It's a little bit.
No, you are.
I drew up this whole chart, and because I thought, oh, I think I understand this, and so I started trying to put the pieces together, almost like a puzzle. And I understand it's just difficult for me to articulate it now to everyone, but I just found the sutta very, very. It's so full of information,
yeah,
in a concentrated form, and the Buddha gives us all the tools in this sutta for awakening.
you explained it very well, Julia. Maybe this sutta alone exemplifies the kind of the underlying theme of this whole study, doesn't it? Because this is a sutta.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard of the Sika Sutta or any of these other suttas, because they're simply not looked at. The Sutta Pitaka is really not part of Buddhism anymore. And look, I mean, these incredible teachings, like something like this. I mean, to me, this is another significant sutta because of its conciseness. But when you understand, as you just said, and I've got what my comment is about, how you were able to see how the simplicity of this sutta relates directly to the simplicity of what the Buddha awakened to, as described as dependent origination in the Paticca-samuppada Sutta, because it's just there, in every sutta the Buddha ever taught, when you understand dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, can be seen that way, and it's an important way to look at it. You know, that this is the result of what we're talking about, is the result of ignorance of Four Noble Truths, and here's where the Dhamma is applied, as you pointed out, Julia. Craving and clinging is that the sixth and seventh factor of the Eightfold Path, and it's also the second noble truth. And so as we understand and start putting these pieces together, it becomes very clear what this path of heightened wisdom, heightened virtue, and heightened concentration is all about. It's just a simple and direct path. Beautifully put, Julia. I see my friend Dathane is here. I haven't seen you in a little bit. Dathane, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, the sutta that we went through, I didn't catch the name. You said the Sikha Sutta, is that S-E-K-H-A Sutta?
S-I-K-K-H-A.
S-I-K-K?
K-K-H-A.
H-A, okay. I've seen it here as a S-E-K-H-A Sutta, the learner.
It's linked in the email and it's on the website.
Okay, all right. Anyway, I don't have too much to say. I just wanted to just thank you for... you know, for having me, and it's good, always good to visit.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I'm glad you're here. All right, that was, I noticed how many of you commented on the brevity of the sutta, so I guess you like the short ones, huh? Matt and I talked yesterday, and with his guidance, we're looking at opening up, having our first class back in Frenchtown on Saturday, June the 12th, and this is still a little bit pending. I'll send an email out on it, but this is what we're thinking. And we're just going to have Saturday classes for probably the first couple of weeks, maybe the first month, and our Tuesday classes will still be live streamed for that transition period, if you will. And again, this is also that the state will allow. We're not going to do anything that contradicts what the state guidelines, but that's what we expect to happen. And it means that I'm probably going to have to implement some kind of reservation system for a first couple of weeks too. But we'll see how that happens. I think we can fit safely at least 15 people. And of course, the same guidelines that we, you know, I'll put all that in the email, but we'll be wearing masks. We won't be touching each other. Obviously, if you're sick, you stay home. And if you've been in contact, you stay away for 14 days, but we all know how to do that. And then the other thing, I was talking had a great talk with my friend Josh yesterday. We talked a little bit about, you know, the worldly situation. And and the only thing I'd like to say about that today is, as I sit with all of you, and I hope I've been saying this all along, I know sometimes it might sound like I'm complaining about the worldly situation, but really what I'm commenting on is how we have exemplified true refuge, and none of us have lost our minds. We haven't given in to desire and fear, and that is such a great benefit to the world, especially today. And I probably made the mistake of turning on the news for a little bit last night, but the one thing the world needs right now is calm and understanding, and we are at least examples of that, and that reinforces the my always present feeling of how fortunate I am to have come across the Dhamma and be able to use that, especially in times like this. So and all of you, you're all really an inspiration to me, how you've taken to the Dhamma and really practice it. One of my first thoughts were, I wonder if we're going to keep the Sangha together. I remember when this first happened, we had the Ratana Sutta for the first two classes, what it means to take true refuge. And as a Sangha, that's just what we've done. And the results, we've been a good example, I think, of what it means to take true refuge in an authentic Dhamma. So thank you all. We're coming to the end of all this craziness. It might be another month or two or maybe even three, but we haven't lost our minds yet, so I don't think we will. We'll finish with metta, as we always do. The Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So again, take a moment to become mindful of your breathing, your in-breath and your out-breath. Unite your mind and your body. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning. Peace. I'll end the recording, but I'll keep the room open for a little bit. If I can.
John, I have to drop off. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week.
Thank you for joining us.
Yep.
Thanks. Thanks, John. Goodbye. Bye. Next week.
See you, Lorna.
Thank you, John.
See you, Laura. Bye. Say hi to everyone.
I will.
Bye, John.
Okay, John. Bye, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye, John. Thanks again.
John. See you,
thank
Josh. You. This is pretty nice. What a sangha, huh? Oh, what do you want? Yeah, Bodhi, he's had enough. I'll be with you in a moment, boy.
Okay, so, how many's that left with John?
We got five here, including me. So.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that you mentioned you had dental work this week. Well, it didn't alter the... In fact, if you had to draw my attention to it about your list, I wouldn't have even known about it. So I think you were more self-conscious about it than we were.
Maybe I was. I didn't want you to think I had a stroke or something while I'm teaching this. Well, it does take a little while to get used to it. It feels like I have a mouth full of plastic, but
yes,
but I'll get used to it.
But from our point of view, it was not distracting at all.
Well, thank
anyway,
you for saying it.
I can see you have a little bit of bruising.
Really?
I hope that
is noticeable.
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah. Which is acceptable. I mean, I know it's all part of dental work. So anyway, I'm just saying that I hope it clears up for you and doesn't give you any more trouble.
Yeah, no, it actually the whole thing was almost painless. So
good. You know,
they did a really good job. The day that the lockdown went into effect, I had minor fall, nothing else happened, but I cracked two teeth. I only had six left to begin with. And then over the course of the lockdown, the rest of my teeth just broke off. Probably because of that, but I couldn't do anything about it because nobody was open. And I just happened to call the middle of last week just to see if there was an announcement or something. And they happened to be taking reservations and they got me in.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it is.
Good.
It is.
All right, then.
Yeah, could the list maybe be from a little bit of leftover swelling?
Maybe. I was really just kidding. That's all. I was just, you know, how sometimes they make inappropriate jokes. Maybe I should have kept my mouth shut, but.
Yeah. Mr. Magoo with the list.
Yeah. Well, I'm very pleased that as a teacher of the Dhamma, I can be such a good example of ongoing dukkha and sickness, aging, and death. I am, by the way, I am planning on dying online during so just so you know that.
All right. With pyrotechnics. Yes.
Lord, I'll see you. Thank you. I'm gonna get going too. I was lucky enough to get a delivery of groceries this morning, so.
Bye, everybody.
Get it. See y'all. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay safe, and I'll see y'all on Tuesday, I hope.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.